Buy now and receive free tire mounting, free rotation every 5,000 miles, and free flat repair. It's the Cooper Tire Sale of the Year. It's the 25th annual Fall Tent Sale at Vermont Tire and Service, the Cooper Tire Store, where your dollar buys more, River Street in Montpelier.
It's time to get the story behind the story. Interviews with newsmakers, newsbreakers, and your phone calls. Radio Vermont presents The Mark Johnson Show.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the program. Thanks for tuning in. Nice day out there today. Gotta love it when it's 63 degrees when you get up in the morning. Forecaster Roger Hill says we're going to get into the 70s today, May tomorrow, and then things will sort of drop off after that, which is about expected here in October. Thanks for joining us on the program. Coming up in a moment here, we're going to talk about some of our fabulous animals. We're going to tell you about a conference coming up that's going to talk about the Endangered Species Act. And we, of course, would welcome your phone calls. You can reach us at the usual phone numbers. You can call us at 244-1777. That's our local number in central Vermont. And you can also reach us on our toll-free lines at 877-291-8255. A couple of previews of coming attractions tomorrow on the program. We talk with the Corrections Commissioner, Andy Polito. Thursday, Republican candidate Scott Milne joins us. That will be coming up at about 9:30. And again, our phone number's on the program. You can reach us at 244-1777 and toll-free 877-291-8255. Let's give a nice warm Radio Vermont welcome. Joining us here in our studios this morning is Brian Shoup. Brian is the executive director of the Vermont Natural Resources Council, an environmental group. Also joining us live on the line this morning is Kim Royer. Kim works for the state of Vermont in the Fish and Wildlife Department. And a biologist, too. Thanks for joining us. Kim, how are you this morning?
Great, Mark. Thank you for having me.
So we're going to be chatting about this event that's coming up on Thursday, October 3rd. The title of it is Loon to Lynx, Protecting Nature and Preparing for the Future. So, Kim, why do we need this?
Well, it's the 40th anniversary of the Endangered Species Act. So in some ways, it's a celebration of those 40 years of successes as a result of the act. And it's also a chance to look to the future at some of the challenges we're going to face in regards to endangered species and all of our wildlife species, fish and wildlife species in Vermont, and to take stock and try to figure out what are some of the things we're going to have to do to make sure that those species are there for our future generations and our grandchildren's grandchildren.
What are we worrying about in particular?
Well, the symposium actually focuses on climate change, which is probably one of the biggest threats that's facing us as we move forward. But we're also looking at other things like habitat fragmentation and habitat loss, invasive species, all of the things that we see on the horizon that might put many of our fish, wildlife, and plant species at risk.
Brian, when's the Vermont Natural Resources Council involved in this?
Well, we've long time been concerned about a variety of environmental issues in Vermont, and wildlife populations and our forest habitat is one of our primary focus areas of our forest and wildlife program. So we welcomed the opportunity with a lot of other organizations to co-host the symposium, which is on October 23rd.
So what are the species, what are the animals specifically that are really in jeopardy here? I don't know which one of you wants to handle that.
Well, I'll start, and Brian, please jump in if you can. I mean, everybody is aware of the bat situation and white nose syndrome and the fungus that has affected the bat population. If the climate warms up in the next 20 years, species like lynx and American marten will be at risk because those species require deep, fluffy snow in order to outcompete some of the other predators that are out there. There's a lot we don't know about how climate change will affect many of our species, and some of the things that we're going to need to be doing is monitoring many of our plant, fish, and wildlife species to determine what the effects will be of the changes in the climate.
How do you do that?
Well, we're doing it now. I mean, we basically are monitoring many of the species that we that are in the state. We have fish monitoring stations that are set up. We monitor temperatures of the water. We're monitoring our bat population. We're monitoring our lynx population. We monitor all the species that we, well, most of the species that we hunt out there. So we have a good sense of whether those populations are going up or down. What we often don't know and what's more difficult to measure are the effects of some of the threats to those species. We don't really know a lot about how fragmentation and habitat loss are affecting those species, how invasives are affecting those species, how the warming temperature will affect those species. So what we're trying to do is plan on ways to adapt to those potential changes into the future.
So what's the threat to the lynx? How do you know that there's a threat to the lynx?
Well, lynx is actually an endangered species, and we didn't have a very large lynx population historically. We now, in recent years, have actually documented upwards of 12 or more lynx in the Northeast Kingdom. But we do know there's been studies going on in sister states like Maine, where we know that lynx depend on deep, fluffy snow in order to outcompete things like coyote and fisher. And if, in fact, the climate changes and we get the type of winters where we get no snow or we get snow with rain events on top where fisher and coyotes can walk on top of the snow, that makes it much more difficult for an animal like lynx to actually outcompete those other predators.
Yeah, one other issue that Kim mentioned, species like lynx also require large blocks of unbroken forest habitat, and she mentioned habitat fragmentation and forest fragmentation. That's one of our primary concerns. A lot of people know the story of Vermont where we deforested the landscape after settlement in the 1700s, and then we kind of had an ecological and an economic collapse, and the state reforested to where it went from something like 25% forest land to now being 80-plus percent. What many people don't know is we're actually, a couple of years ago, hit a point where our forest is now in decline, and we're cutting it up, we're subdividing it, we're building roads and driveways, and the impact that that has on wildlife populations is a big question mark for us. It's a big concern for us.
So this has changed from growing to declining?
Absolutely, yeah.
Wow. All right. So, Kim, what do you think the impact of that will be?
Well, we're very concerned about the impact of forest fragmentation on our wildlife species. And as Brian mentioned, there's a lot of effort right now going into looking at large forest blocks and maintaining connectivity between those blocks, so that as other kinds of threats threaten our species, at least they'll be able to move from one large forest block to another if we can maintain those corridors between them. And that's a goal of the department and I think of Brian's organization.
We're talking about a conference coming up on Thursday, October 23rd, called Loon to Lynx. It's celebrating the 40th anniversary of the Endangered Species Act. Kim, I don't mean to be repetitive, but I want to go back here to the beginning. I mean, what was it that prompted? Is there something that's happening out there? I mean, why now? Why in the middle of October have this conference as opposed to a year ago or a year from now?
Well, basically, I think it was, in fact, the 40th anniversary of the Federal Endangered Species Act. And so that prompted a celebratory look at the successes of that act, and then also gave us a chance to take a point in time and figure out, how have we been doing and what are the kinds of things that we need to do to move wildlife populations into the future and keep them healthy and resilient to the kinds of threats that are on the horizon.
So how can either one of you possibly, I mean, what can be done about climate change or global warming to help the animals? That sounds a little overwhelming. Brian, when do you start?
Well, there's two approaches. There's mitigation to try to stem the effects of climate change through better investment in renewable energy and decreasing our use of fossil fuels. And then there's adaptation, which is partly what we're talking about here, maintaining large contiguous blocks of forest connected to one another across the landscape it gives, and I'm not a wildlife biologist, so I'd like Kim to maybe correct me if I'm wrong, but it gives flexibility to populations. It promotes genetic diversity among different species. It allows them to move across the landscape as they deal with the stresses of a warming climate.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly right, Brian. I mean, basically what I think we're all looking at trying to do is build resiliency on the landscape so that populations can move about based on their habitat needs as things change and as the climate changes.
Go ahead.
Just one other reason, I think, to take this not only a celebratory look, but also a little bit of a critical look at both the Endangered Species Act and Vermont's Endangered Species Act. Like any law that's 40 years old, conditions have changed, climate change being the primary kind of new concern. But it's an opportunity to say, is it working and what can we do better?
If you have any comments or questions, you can join us at 244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255. There was this story that came out at the end of last month that talked about how the Earth has lost half of the species out there in the past 40 years. Kim, can you start us off? What's going on out there?
Well, it's interesting because Brian just mentioned this to me the other day. I think it is a very, very scary study. And, I mean, it's probably a combination of many factors, disease, invasive species, climate change, loss of habitat, fragmentation of habitat. All of these things are coming together. And our species are just declining as a result of these impacts. And I think that in Vermont, we're continuing to do a fairly good job, and we're not seeing those kinds of losses in many species here because Vermonters care about wildlife and maintaining healthy wildlife populations. But worldwide, many, many of our species are at great risk.
Correct you if I can. I think what the study said and was put out by the World Wildlife Fund or Foundation mm-hmm. was not that we lost half of our species, but the loss of species is definitely a major concern and a big problem. It was that we lost half of the population of all wildlife, of all invertebrate species across the landscape. So we have half of the number of critters out on the land than we did 40 years ago. And I'm not sure which is more scary, the loss of species or
right.
just the loss of populations.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what species, for example, are we doing better with in Vermont that other places are not?
Well, you know, Brian sort of talked a little bit about the land use history in Vermont, and many Vermonters realize that as a result of that land use history, we lost many of our iconic species. I mean, we lost white-tailed deer, and we relegated black bear to a very small portion of the state. We lost fisher, we lost turkey, we lost beaver, keystone species, and as a result of the efforts of sportsmen in particular, and the Fish and Wildlife Department and other partners, many of those species have been recovered and are, in fact, many of their populations are higher now than they might have been pre-settlement. So we're doing really well with the species that we've focused on. And we've actually also, as a result of the Endangered Species Act, we've recovered loons, peregrines, osprey, eagles are coming back. We've gone from zero nests in 2003 to 15 to 20 nests in 2013 with 25 or more fledglings. So, you know, when we focus on species and recovery, we can do a pretty amazing job. But we kind of equate species recovery with or endangered species work with emergency room triage. I mean, where, you know, you're making some life and death decisions. It's sometimes really expensive. And decisions have to be made based on which species need the most attention. So some species fall off the table. And habitat, protecting habitat is one way, and natural communities is one way to try to maintain the entire population of species that are native to the state.
Who's supposed to be going to this conference? Brian?
Go ahead, Brian.
It's open to the public. I think most practitioners, people who are involved in conservation biology or some natural resource fields are likely going to be attracted. That's who we expect to come up. Registration is still open. We've had a pretty good response so far. And we expect some interest from the university and other area colleges as well. It's got a pretty good program. The keynote speaker is Colin O'Mara, who's the new director of the National Wildlife Federation. There's several panels dealing with different aspects of wildlife conservation in Vermont and the Endangered Species Act. And then the other keynote is a fellow, Joe Roman, who's a Harvard professor, who's written several books on endangered species and species extinctions.
And then I think there'll be two panels, one about how science informs endangered species conservation and then another one on the challenge of climate change, protecting nature and Vermont's future.
So do I have to be super wonky to go to this thing?
No, but it helps. You'll leave super wonky.
Okay. So how do we sign up, Brian? What's the deal on that?
Good question. You can go to register online at loon2links registration.evenbright.com, or you can go to the Vermont Fish and Wildlife Department's website.
That might be easier. What do you know what that website is, Kim? I'll bet you know.
It's you can just Google VT Fish and Wildlife, and it'll pop right up. The homepage will pop up.
So, Kim, what's the story in the fish population? I know you're a biologist. I know you're probably pretty in tune with that. So what's happened to the fish population in the past 40 years?
Well, I'm actually a wildlife biologist, but I would say that the risks to fish populations related to climate change will be warming waters and whether or not some of our native trout populations can survive the changes in climate. And also, I think, habitat loss in terms of conversion of buffer habitats to non-forested habitat, the loss of woody debris in streams is another concern on the part of fisheries biologists. So, it's sort of the same underlying threats, the loss of habitat, the change in the warming of the climate. Invasive species is another concern of fish biologists, and as we see an increase in invasive species, it changes the whole system in both Lake Champlain and some of our streams. So, they're dealing with the same threats, and we'll have to figure out ways to try to minimize those threats in order to maintain resiliency of those fish populations.
All right. I should have asked you about the fish that are out in the woods. I'm sorry. More in the wheelhouse. What do you both actually hope to really accomplish at the end of this day? What?
Well, I think partly it's greater awareness of the issues and what we need to do about it. I think, as I said, Vermont has an Endangered Species Act. It's 41 years old. It was passed before the federal law. And what can we do better in the future is something that I think we're going to be talking about that day, and hopefully we'll come up with some ideas.
And a lot of these successes that we've had in the past have been built on the synergy of partnerships and just getting people in one room together, all of these partner organizations, the general public, who, we couldn't do this without the general public. These are their species. And so it's just getting a chance to get together and talk about these issues and problem solve together will be one of the things that will come out of it.
The conference is Loon to Link, celebrating the 40th anniversary of the Endangered Species Act. It'll be at Echo Aquarium and Lake and Science Center down in Burlington. Registration, $15 fee. You can. There's actually a contact number here. Charlie, is it Charlie or Charlene?
It's Charlie Drury, yes.
Charlie Drury at 828-1000. So, Brian, if I make it through the whole day at this symposium, do I get to go to the movies?
You do. Okay. Thanks for bringing that up.
Tell me about that.
So this is the 6th annual Wild and Scenic Film Festival, which is at the Black Box Theater at Main Street Landing, right next to Echo. It starts at 5:30 on the 23rd, and it's a fundraiser for VNRC, co-hosted by VNRC in Patagonia, Patagonia Burlington. We've been doing it for 6 years. It's a great event. This year we're highlighting both the Endangered Species Act and the 50th anniversary of the Wilderness Act, which was recently celebrated at the Breadloaf campus in Ripton. And it's just a good event. There's good food. There's good local beer. There's a lot of great movies dealing with citizen activism and conservation and natural resource protection. I always find it to be a very inspirational event. And that starts at 5:30 and goes till, I believe, 7:30.
Local beer, did I hear?
I said local beer, okay. Yes. Always.
Of course.
I'm not clear here. How does this work? Are there different movies going on at the same time, or how is it?
No, there's no feature film, a 2.5-hour movie. Mostly they're shorts. They're between 5 and 15-minute movies put out by independent filmmakers across the country. And there's two showings. There'll be a collection of movies starting at sometime around 6 or so. I don't recall what the exact, after people can get in and get settled and get a local beer and some food. And then we take an intermission. We have a silent auction. And then we have a second set of movies.
Okay. All right. So it starts at 5:30.
Starts at 5:30, yeah, okay. Main Street Landing.
Let me take a call from Northfield. Scott, how you doing this morning?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good, Mark. Thanks for asking. I would like to ask a pertinent question. You had the governor on the other day, and it relates to wildlife population. The governor was saying that unemployment is, basically in a better shape and all that sort of thing. And both you and I disagreed with him in the fact that there's people that are underemployed and such. I also wonder if Vermont Fish and Wildlife are expounding on the numbers of wildlife that are actually out there as to versus the hunters. There doesn't seem to be as much as there used to be. And I'd like to hear something on that. Thanks.
Wow, okay. That was an interesting question. Kim, you want to handle that one?
So the question, if I'm clear, was that it sounds like he's concerned that there are fewer wildlife than he remembers.
Yeah, and that actually people like you and others may claim, is what I heard in there, too.
Right. Well, it depends if he's talking about the bear population. That's actually increased significantly in the last 20 years. The deer population is probably lower than it was in the 50s and 60s by design. At that point in time, deer were responding to the farmland that had been abandoned, and we had a very large deer population that was basically eating itself out of house and home. And so that population has been reduced, and it depends on which zone you're hunting in. Some zones may be lower than others. But if you're a hunter that used to hunt in the 50s and 60s, chances are what you recall, it is different now than it was back then. But that those populations are not at all at risk. The beaver population has increased significantly in the last 100 years. So most of our species that are hunted or trapped are actually doing very well.
Turkeys have really, really
rebounded. Turkeys is another great example. They were reintroduced in 1969. And they have just taken off.
Mark, I think the caller also mentioned just that there's fewer hunters in the woods. And I think, Kim, that's the case, isn't it? Fewer hunter license?
The hunting license sales are going down. And it's something that we're addressing through our hunter education program. But it's important that the hunters that are out there take kids out in the woods, get them out there, even if they don't get them out there to hunt, get them out there to enjoy the outdoors. Vermonters, traditionally, their roots have been in the land, and are, the success that we've seen here is because Vermonters, the culture of Vermont is a hunting and fishing and outdoor culture, and that's why I believe Vermonters care about wildlife and the success of wildlife populations. But we have to get the younger people out into the woods and enjoying the out-of-doors, doing hiking or hunting or fishing or trapping or whatever their grandparents or parents enjoy doing, or their friend. If you can mentor somebody, that would be just a wonderful thing to do, both for the resource and for the kid.
Let's go to Indiana. Richard, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Mark. Just a few minutes ago, the lady said that Vermont was doing a pretty good job at recovering quote-unquote lost species there in the state. And earlier, the gentleman had said the forests are in decline. Those seem like diametrically opposed statements. Could you comment, please?
Okay. Thank you.
Well, maybe I'll start. I think that they reflect a growing concern that we have done a very good job. Our forest did recover over a 100-year period. The Fish and Wildlife Department's done a great job with some species recovery, but we do have new pressures brought to bear on our wildlife populations. Habitat is fragmenting. Climate change is happening. So right now is an area where are we pivoting? Are we in a turning point in how our wildlife populations will continue to prosper in the future? I don't know, but that's really one of the points of having this conversation on the 23rd.
Anything you want to add to that, Kim?
I think Brian's exactly right. We've done a really good job, and as he said before, our forests have recovered, but now we're starting to see this decline, and we're concerned about going the other way. And we've seen, for example, our bat population. We've lost some of our bat species, our cave bat species, by 95% of the population in just a few years as a result of an invasive fungus. So we are aware of the risks. Those declines can happen very quickly, and as Brian said, that is one of the reasons for this conference.
It's pretty amazing, though, the resilience of animals, too.
Exactly. That's right.
They can come back. I should mention, Brian, I don't have to go to the conference all day to go to the movie, though, right?
That's correct. Yeah, they're separate events. If you need to be here all day and you want to come up after work, we welcome you.
Okay. So remind me again, so the movie's at the Black Box Theater, which is
at
the
Main Street Landing, down on the lake, next to Echo. It's at 5:30, we open the doors. Movies begin, I believe, around 6. There'll be an intermission in between. We'll have a silent auction and food and drink, and an opportunity to get together with other folks and watch some good movies.
Like appetizers and stuff like that?
Yes.
Like open bar, kind of thing?
Too. Yeah, I think it's a cash bar.
Okay, all right. We're going to take one more call here, and then we're going to let you folks go. And a reminder, if you want to sign up, you can call Charlie Drury at 828-1000. Might be the easiest way. Let's go to Barry. Charlie, good morning. How's it going?
Very good, Mac. I just caught some of the issues there, and I would say why we do not have too many hunters anymore is because every place we hunt now, it's posted, and nobody wants these people who, people come in, buy the land. They don't want us to hunt on the land. We go and ask permission. Out of 20 places that we have hunted, 63, we're down to 3.
Wow.
So, you're trying to promote hunting in Vermont, but if you don't have a place to hunt, it's the licenses, it's not going to happen. People aren't going to buy a license, and they're not going to take their son or their daughter hunting. That is a big problem.
So, Charlie, do they give you a pretty consistent reason why they don't want you around or not?
A lot of the reason, they don't give us a reason. In some other cases, is they like to see the deer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
And a lot of the areas, it's new people coming into Vermont, and they just don't want you on your land. So that's a big problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It certainly is a pretty recurrent theme I hear, too.
Yeah.
Brian, what do you say to that?
Well, Kim mentioned the culture of Vermont, and I think we are seeing some cultural changes, and it relates back to the fragmentation of our large blocks of forest, that it has not only impacts on wildlife, but impacts on recreation and access, and economic impacts. It really affects the forest products industry. As you whittle your big blocks of forest down to smaller house lots, you're taking it away from hunters, you're taking it away from forest management, and you're taking it away from some species of wildlife.
It's also a money issue, too, isn't it, Kim?
In terms of, just explain that a little bit, Mark.
Well, fewer hunters out in the woods.
Oh, for us, yes, it is. I mean, we don't like to look at it that way, but certainly hunters support a lot of the conservation work that the department does. And we encourage hunting because we value the hunting culture, but also fewer hunting licenses means fewer revenues for us.
So is there anything that you're looking to get out of this for legislation in the next session? Is there anything that you want the legislature to do to enhance the viability of the animals?
Well, we are possibly going to make some changes to, or propose some changes to, our state endangered species law. It's 40 years old, as Brian said. We'd like to update and modernize the language and make it more consistent with our neighboring states. And the original law did not protect critical habitats, so we may look at ways that we can narrowly define those to try to better protect some of these species. But we'll do that with input from all of our stakeholders. We plan to meet with each stakeholder group individually and get feedback before we move forward.
Kim, thank you for your time this morning. I appreciate it very much.
Great. Thank you so much. It was fun.
Kim Royer is with the Fish and Wildlife Department. Is there anything you want to add before I let you go here?
No, Mark, just thanks for having us. Thanks for raising this issue and raising awareness around it. And I encourage folks to come out to the Wild and Scenic Film Festival.
Well, and we should all care about the animals because it's all interconnected.
Absolutely.
And by the way, Brian's going to be leaving here with a bag of Vermont Coffee Company coffee because he was kind enough to show up here. We give it to our guests, and he showed up. I should give you two bags. He show up here with a Vermont Coffee Company mug. Not bad.
Free stuff from Vermont Coffee Company.
You must have saved it. How many bags did you save to get that? Do you
we drank a lot of coffee.
Yeah. All right. We're going to take a quick break. That was Brian Shoup. He's with the Vermont Natural Resources Council. We were also talking with Kim Royer, who is with the Agency of Natural Resources in the Fish and Wildlife Department. Quick break. We'll be back in just a few moments.
The merchants of downtown Montpelier.